accession number 28776, rule 16.
Aberwyn and LIGO, reel 16.
Lord. Yes, well, the doctor came down to the ship, and sure enough, he was taken off and taken to hospital. And I was then left, when I returned from my evening engagement, with a problem. And I could either, what I should have done, was to make the senior lieutenant, the first lieutenant, in his place. I didn't do that. I fed them all in, and the officers, that is, and I said, and the chief petty officers, and I said, we're just going to move over one and cover for the first lieutenant so that we'll all take part of his responsibility, and you, the chief mercenary mate, I suppose he was, will do most of the kind of disciplinary work. Now, this, as it turned out, was a fundamental mistake. However, that's what I did. So the first test of this was we were refueling from the, I can't remember the ship now, it may have been the owner, I can't remember. And I decided to practice an emergency breakaway, which is what it would do if you were fueling and suddenly came across something that was in your way or some emergency occurred. And to do this, you then said to the officer that was in charge of the fueling, I'm going to do an emergency breakaway, so that he was alerted. You sounded the siren, and then you turned the ship roughly away and opened up the throttles, and off you went. And so the gunnery officer who was in charge came up to see me and said, fine, we're all set. So I said, right, you'll hear the siren go, and that'll be it. Well, the sirens went, I poured on the power, and he couldn't knock the strop off. And so I was left towing the owner. Now, again, there was two alternatives for me. One was to throttle back, stop both engines and drift back, but that might have been dangerous, inasmuch as we were so close to the owner. And the second was to press on, regardless, until the wire parted. And indeed it did, and it flashed across in front of me and carved a large lump out of the wood on the balustrade in front of me. However, there was the poor old owner with all its kind of pipes hanging in the water, and I was in a somewhat disheveled state myself. And so I had to report this to Flag Officer Sea Training that I'd carried out, you know, had this misadventure, shall we say. But luck, you know, is a great thing, because the next thing that poor old owner had to do was to do fueling astern with another frigate. I can't remember the name of it now. It was one of the frigates that was going up the Gulf. And this chap in the Merc, and it was a fairly gloomy day, proceeded to drive the owner straight onto Chesil Beach. Actually, he didn't, because the master of the owner did an emergency turn himself away. But this was a far greater misdemeanor than mine, and so it was rather overshadowed. And although I got a rollicking, I didn't get a terribly bad one. So that was the result of trying to be a bit too, I suppose, democratic in a way. However, it was the only bad episode. We had a very, very lively crew, and I was very lucky in both my officers and the crew, and they responded, as people always do, to a challenge. And so we came away from Portland with fairly flying colours. But it was an interesting commission, in that my leader was Dunbar Naismith, the son of the famous VC Admiral. And he was immediately christened by my crew a Crowbar Newswift, and because he was a fairly granite-faced officer. And he was very keen to get all the squadron together and do things together. But as is always the case, it's very, very difficult to do. And the first thing that happened to me, having been sent back to Chatham for, I suppose, Christmas leave or some such leave, was to be sent off to Gibraltar. And there we were to be self-maintained for a bit and clean ourselves up after the experiences of Portland in the better weather, which we duly did. But as an indication of the kind of crew I had, the morning we were due to sail, at 9 o'clock, it had been agreed, because tension between Spain and the UK was moderating slightly, and the Admiral, Flag Officer Gibraltar, had decided, or it had been arranged, that he should make a call on the Spanish governor of the province of Algeciras. And he was to do this by taking passage in the Lowestoft and go across, flying his flag, and call on the general in Algeciras. So we were waiting. I had my breakfast and was waiting, and the officer of the day came to see me. Another first lieutenant, he was back by then, came to see me and said, you should be aware, sir, that we're going to play a little jape on the staff of Flag Officer Gibraltar. And I said, oh, what's that? They said, well, we're going to run a Lowestoft pennant up on the yardarm there of the headquarters, and it'll be attached to a gas balloon, so they won't be on a riding shackle, so they won't be able to get it down. So I said, when are you going to do this? And he said, well, any minute now. I said, all right. I said, I'll go for a walk ashore. Now when the phones start ringing, I won't be here. But I will be back. So sure enough, I went ashore, and sure enough, there was the Lowestoft pennant shortly fluttering up onto the the flag hoist at Gibraltar. So when I came back, the phone was ringing, it was just the chief of staff, who said to me, oh, Ligo, he said, I don't suppose you know, but one of your chaps has hoisted a Lowestoft pennant out on our flag, and we can't get it down. I said, oh, really, sir, just a minute. I put the phone down to pretend to go out and have a look. I came back and said, you're absolutely... He said, I know I'm right. You know, he was getting really... And I said, well, what do you want? He said, well, can you get it? I want you to get it down. I said, all right. So I went back in and sent for the gunnery officer, because I suspected, his name was Benny Goodman, that it was he who was the instigator of this. And he came in and came firmly to attention in my office. And I said, right, you put it up, you'll have to get it down. So he said, yes, sir, and produced a shotgun from under his arm. So he went ashore, shot the balloon, and down came the Lowestoft pennant. So it was a great joke, we thought, at the time. And then, of course, it was time for the Admiral to come on board, which he did. And I think he was a gunnery officer or something, because he was slightly deaf. So we then proceeded to go over to leave Gibraltar and go over to Algeciras. We were due to lay off and fire a salute at some time or the other, and it was to be returned by the garrison at Algeciras. So we had been fitted, can you believe it, with the latest piece of naval armament, which was a saluting gun. It was the only piece of new equipment since the end of the war, and that was this little saluting gun. So we had these saluting guns, and we were on an enclosed bridge in the Lowestoft. I don't think the Admiral had ever been on an enclosed bridge in his life before. So he was a bit, being a bit deaf. And when we fired the salute, he said, can they hear those guns, Ligo? Do you think they can hear those guns? And I said, well, if they can't, sir, the Admiral has made an enormous cock of it, because that's the only piece of new naval equipment we've had since the end of the war. So anyway, sure enough, after a due pause, we saw the little puffs of smoke coming from the return salute. And having done that, we then were clear to go ahead and enter Gibraltar. I entered Algeciras. Now, I was overdoing the casual act by that time, and as we turned in, I was looking at my watch carefully to make sure that we were going to arrive alongside precisely on time. And then I realized I was running just a little bit late, so I turned the revs up on the ship, and we proceeded to go into this mole, alongside this mole, in Algeciras. And when I looked down the mole, as we made the approach, I saw there was a large banana boat moored ahead of us. And I thought, well, if you don't get this right, LIGO, we should be covered in bananas. So we did come in a bit fast, and I had to give a quick touch of Fullerstone to bring her up all standing as we came in. But as it worked out, absolutely bang on time, there we were. And the Admiral duly went ashore and made his calls. And then there was a reception in Algeciras for us, and we went along there. And I remember meeting a general, a Spanish general. I asked him how long he'd been in Algeciras, and he said something like 15 years. And it was rather a slightly longer time of posting than we were enjoying in the Royal Navy. However, that being over, we then gave a reception on board Lowestoft, which all went splendid, and then we were sailing for the West Indies. So we were going to land the Admiral in Algeciras, and he was going to go back by car. So just before he was just due to go over the side, he said, "I'd like a word with you, Ligo." And I thought, here we go, I'm going to get a bollocking. So we went behind the 4-inch gun turret, and he said, "There was an episode this morning," he said, "and I don't suppose you knew anything about it." He said, "But when my flag came down, your lowest off pennant went up in its place. And this is a very, you know, very bad breach of protocol, Ligo. And something like this could do your career more damage than a collision." And I thought, well, strike me down. So I said, "Why, aye, sir," and all the rest of it. And he then buggered off over the side. But, of course, it quickly went round the ship that I'd been given a rollicking for this little performance this morning. And that particular chap standing was not terribly high in the ship. But I'll come back to that. We then shot off to the West Indies, and let me see. Oh, yes. We were due to go to Grenada, I should say. And where did we go, first of all? Because we had to fuel. Oh, yes, I remember. We went into Ponta Delgado in the Portuguese territory down there. And as we came round the bend into the place, to my surprise, they'd mounted a guard of honour and everything and said, "We weren't prepared for this." However, it was a very good visit, and we were only there for a few hours as we fueled. And then we shot off again for Grenada. And the last time I'd been in Grenada, of course, was as a lieutenant in the Verian Bay in charge of the landing party when we'd landed in support of civil power because of the activities of a certain Mr. Geary. When we arrived in Grenada, we fired a salute as we came in, and Mr. Geary took to the hills, thinking that the dreaded LIGO was back to take charge of it once again. And so, but it was a very good visit. We enjoyed it very much, and we then went off on our way. Where were we going? I'm trying to remember. Anyway, it was a visit to the West Indies. And after that deployment, which was very good, I was returning to England, and there, for the first time, was going to meet up with the rest of the squadron, led by Captain, whatever his name was, I've forgotten now. Anyway, and Dunbarney Smith. And I was determined we'd see him before he saw us. And sure enough, we did. And I then made a signal, which I thought was terribly funny, to him to say, "I'm delighted to see you, sir. We've been looking for you ever since Gibraltar." However, the next thing I got was having joined from ahead into station. He'd left a hole in the thing to see that I could actually put the ship in the right hole, which I did. Captain to repair on board the leader. So we shot up alongside, and I went over on Jack's Day to be briefed by him on the next big squadron jaunt, which was to be an exercise in the Scillies, as I recall. However, having had all this explained to me, I then was going to transfer back to Lowestoft. So Lowestoft was called alongside. And as I was going out onto the deck of the Berwick, which was his ship, I thought, well, I better say something. I said, did you receive my signal this morning, sir? And he looked at me somewhat fixed. He said, yes. He said, yes, I couldn't understand it. I said, I was just trying to be funny, sir. That's all. And so I was shipped back to Lowestoft. And we returned eventually after exercises back again into Chatham. Now, here occurred an episode which I used to illustrate the differences in attitude of senior officers. I was able to live ashore while we were in Chatham because my house was only about 10 miles away. And so Chatham, in the winter in dock, is not the happiest place in the world. So I came back one morning on board, and the first lieutenant reported, and I said, everything all right? Yes, fine, sir. Oh, he said, I should report one episode that occurred in the night. And I said, oh, really? What was that? He said, well, at 11 o'clock last night, I think it was about 11 o'clock, we made a signal to the, what was the name of the ship? It was a diesel frigate on the other side of the basin. And we said, carry out, the signal said, carry out Chattox 1. And I said, I see. And how did you make the signal? Well, he said, we made it on the broadcast. I said, mistake. If you're going to pull, you're going to have fun and pull somebody's leg, the way to do it is to hand dist one signal. You take it round and give it to the chaplain. He takes it. Then nobody else knows that signal's been made. But that signal that you make could have been picked up by any other ship. So that's the first thing that you got wrong. However, what happened? He said, oh, well, of course, hell broke out. He said, we could see them running around over there. And he said, this captain was ashore, so they had to bring him back on board to open up the safe because they believe it would be in the confidential books. So the captain duly was brought on board, and of course, there was no such thing. And well, he couldn't find it. So they turned the duty staff officer out at about 1 o'clock in the morning, and he didn't know. And he called the admiral, and this was Bill Belo, who was a very well known ex submariner. And he said, "Go back to bed, you fools! You're having your legs pulled." So they all duly returned about that. So I said, right, well, the first thing we've got to do, I said, is the gunnery officer, who is the instigator of this, and he was, is to go over to, I can't remember the name of the ship on the other side, but I think it's in my book, and call on the captain, and I happen to know him. He's a very robust, but a very nice chap, and he'll give him a tremendous rocking, but that'll be the end of it. So he duly went over and apologized, and he duly got this rollicking and came back. So I said, fine. Now, the next thing we've got to do is get you to apologize to the Admiral. So I got on to the Admiral Secretary and said, well, there was an episode last night, and I'm afraid it would cause the Admiral to be disturbed, and the instigator of this would like to come over and apologize for what he did. So I was saying, well, the Admiral doesn't want to see him. So I thought, oh, dear, that's bad news. So I said to Carlos, well, he doesn't want to see you. That's not very good news. But meantime, you've got 14 days stoppage of leave from me for this performance, except you won't have to do it. But you have been punished, so you can't be punished twice. So he said, I said, we better wait. And sure enough, a signal came from Flag Officer Medway, as it was, to Lowestoft for the gunnery officer, intend to carry out Chattox 2 on board Lowestoft with my entire staff at 12 o'clock. And along they all came and drank on the gunnery officer for an hour. And, of course, he said to me afterwards, Bill Peeler, he said, you know, the staff meeting this morning, and some of my staff were saying, well, it was a disgraceful thing to happen. And I said, now, hang about. Have none of you done something like this? He said, come on, how do we get back at them? That's the way we've got to be. And so his reputation and standing shot up as a complete contrast to what had happened after we left Gibraltar. But it was a happy ship, and I was very sad to leave it in many ways, to go back to Chatham and to find myself back embroiled in the war, the inter-service warfare in the Admiralty once again.
Could I ask one question? What do you feel makes a happy ship?
Well, I think what makes a happy ship is that the ship is taken into the confidence of the captain, who tells them what it is he's going to do, how he's going to do it, and also is seen to be completely and utterly fair, and doesn't take sides in any matter, and will allow a certain amount of minor misconduct if it's good for the morale of the ship. The famous occasion, of course, was that chap was brought up for being late on board, which is again in my book, and he was a well-known skate, and the first lieutenant was determined to get him. Now, I'm getting mixed up, I think, between the Lowestoft and the Juno. I think this actually happened in the Juno, but it doesn't alter the point. The chap was brought up on a charge for being late on board, and the ship was under sailing orders, so it was a servetic, what do they call it? Something, offence. And so when he was brought to my table, there was no excuse. I mean, he was late on board, that's all there was to it. So he had to plead. I said, how do you plead, guilty or not guilty? And incidentally, I was the instigator of changing the way in which conduct or affairs were conducted at the captain's table, in that before then it was all very kind of, you know, one-sided. But I insisted that, you know, one of the things was that we said to the man, how do you plead, guilty or not guilty? And it has to have been explained to him that what if it's guilty, what it means, if not guilty, what it means. So the chap said, guilty but with mitigating circumstances. And I said, oh, and what are those? And he said, well, my wife has a, I think that was a canary. And I said, oh, yes. And he said, she's very fond of this canary, sir, and she takes it everywhere with her in this little cage. And it came into the bedroom when we went to bed last night. She must have left the door open. The canary got out, it flew around the room, and landed on top of the little knob on the alarm. So it held the alarm knob down, and so the alarm didn't go off, so I didn't wake up this morning. So everybody kind of, you know, just went, ah. So I said, yes, understood, case dismissed. The first lieutenant came to me and said, sir, did you realise? I mean, that was a load of cosplay. I said, of course it was. Of course it was. And it'll go around the entire ship and they will all know. But they will also know that the captain has a sense of humour. And I said, but we'll get him next time, number one. I mean, don't worry about it because he's a well-known skate. He'll do it again and he'll get caught for something else. But it was too good a story to, and so. But it's little things, I think, like that. Also encouraging sport. I think that's very important, to encourage the soccer team, the whatever team it is, it's the rugby team, to go off and compete and give them time to go to do it. And to make, you know, ceremony of things and to ensure that the standards in the ship are extremely high and that it's extremely clean, that the ship is spotlessly clean. So, you know, and to, you know, I remember many times going, poor chap, cleaning the heads, you know, it's not the best job in the world, and standing and telling him what an important job he was doing and how important it was that the whole atmosphere of the ship is conditioned. And but I think that's the kind of thing. Also, and if there is any good news or bad news, but there's some good news about the programme, fall them all in and tell them all about it, why it's being done and all the rest of it. Explain if you're going on an exercise, what this exercise is about, why we're doing it and all the rest of it, so that they feel part and parcel of what is going on and not separate from the captain or the officer corps.
Is it important then to foster a sense of belonging and that ship is their home and they have to have pride in that?
Yes, I'm sure that's right. They have to have pride in the fact that they've got a cap tally which says Lowestoft or Juno or Ark Royal or whatever it was, and that marks them down. And everybody else knows that where they're from. And so they carry on their cap band the reputation of the entire ship, and it's got to be made clear to them. I used to have terrible trouble. Well, not terrible trouble. Well, not exactly easy. I never liked being sent to a French port for liberty, because you knew that under ordinary circumstances there'd be a fight, there'd be trouble. They don't naturally get on, these two nations, when they're under. So I used to fall all my ship's company and say, now you're going ashore in a French port, and let me tell you, their ways of life and their standards of and their way they see things are entirely different from us. For example, they believe that their navy is one of, you know, untold success, whereas I can tell you it's an unmitigated disaster. They've never won any battle in which they've been engaged with, but there's no point in telling them that because they don't want to know. We are there as they're our hosts, we are guests of them, and we must behave accordingly. And if they start telling you all this stuff, you just say, oh, really? Or you just accept it. Don't get involved with it. Just enjoy the marvelous standard of life that they have and the differences and all those kind of things. And but, I mean, sometimes it works. Sometimes I went, when I was an admiral, I went with one of the assault ships, either Intrepid or the other one, and Fearless, to Toulon. And, of course, we had all these Marines, and, God, they really beat the place up. So I discovered next morning that I think I was in one of the other ships, Bulwark or Albion in those days, or whatever it was. The admiral commanding, the French admiral commanding the district was Camadec, who was a Free French admiral. He had been in the Free French forces. And so I said, right, we're going to have to apologize. The Royal Marines are going to have to apologize to him. And the way we do that is, he had a lovely house with a big lawn in front of it. We're going to have the Royal Marine Band, which we had with us, outside his, on the lawn, at 8 o'clock in the morning. So wake him up, and he had to play the Grand Medallion March, which is that French, tan, 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 that one. And of course the bandmaster said to me, well, I don't have the music. I said, well, bloody well get some then. Don't stand there telling me that. And so off went the Royal Marine Band. And of course, he was in tears at the end of it, and the whole thing was forgiven, and it was a great visit. But, I mean, these things happen, and you have to make the best of it. But that's by the way, it was just comes about in relation to how you handle the ship's company. But the great thing, of course, was to challenge them. When the whole squadron was alongside, when I had the Lowestoft, and there was Berwick and I can't remember another ship, and Scarborough. Berwick was the leader, Scarborough, and it was a converted destroyer that was in the middle. Anyway, we used to have the chaps marching along the jetty, shouting out to them, come out, come out. We'll challenge you at anything. We'll challenge you at anything. You know, and with a tremendous spirit. And I have to tell you, it wasn't often reciprocated, which was a great shame, because one could have had a, you know, good... Because there's nothing more... It makes for good companionship and all that. But it was all part of building up the morale of that particular ship. I remember at Portland, there was an exercise, and we were supposed to be the baddies in Lowestoft, and the Royal Marines in this ship that had nearly run the owner aground were defending, and one of our chaps grabbed a Royal Marine's rifle straight out of his hands. You know, you can imagine how that went around the ship. And, of course, it was a tremendous indignity for the poor old Royal Marine to have his rifle snatched away from him. But it was always, you know, keeping it going was the most important thing. And, as I say, it does, from time to time, it may stand you into slight danger if you run up against somebody senior who's terribly stuffy. But, you know, they're not worth bothering about, because on the whole, sooner or later you'll find somebody who does accept that and understand that. And I was very lucky in the senior officers I met who were always very generous to Ligo, overlooking his misdemeanors, presumably on the basis that it was better for the service that I continued.